This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haider, coming to you from Gadigal land. Today, is artificial intelligence going to make it impossible to sort fact from fiction? We're playing you the second part of The Guardian's new podcast about AI, Black Box. If you find it interesting, you can subscribe to Black Box in your podcast feed. The third episode is out already. Here's host Michael Safi.
Before we begin, just a heads up, today's episode contains a little bit of swearing.
Straight up here and right.
Okay.
We're done.
For the last few months, I feel like I've been wandering through a hall of mirrors.
To these traffic lights and then right.
Oh, got it.
Especially on this one day, a few weeks ago, when I was walking around London with producers Josh Kelly and Alex Atak, looking for an AI business who, by this point, we'd been trying to track down for months.
Should we push the button?
Let's do it, yeah.
Finding ourselves in dark basements of Victorian buildings.
My name's Michael. I'm a journalist. I'm looking for a business.
In winding corridors of faceless office blocks.
Unfortunately, I won't be able to give you any details, but they're not located in here.
Knocking on doors with handwritten labels and nobody behind them. Being met with nothing but blank stares.
Are you expecting? Is it someone expecting?
No, we're just trying to like find a business, basically, that's registered to this building, but...
We were looking for a company that distorts reality. The people behind a product the world's never really seen before. One that someone might be using right now in your office, in your school, that gives them a power to expose you against your will, and which police and lawmakers around the world are baffled about how to deal with. We wanted to figure out who was behind this thing. Can we get to the truth? And along the way, realised that very question might be about to slip out of our grasp. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. This is Black Box, Episode 2, The Hunt for Clotho.
It used to be believed none of what you hear and only half of what you see.
What you are looking at here is a fabricated, computer-generated image of an event that did not happen.
Looks like me, sounds like me, you may say.
False depictions.
When the hell did I say that?
Now, with the rise of AI,
what you're seeing is not real.
Strange, isn't it?
So, can you just describe what we're seeing?
So, we're just driving through a pretty kind of small street now, past a pharmacy, a few older people walking around. It's a Saturday, so it's pretty quiet. Last year, as we were trying to get our heads around AI, we heard about this story about something that had happened in this small Spanish town called Almendralejo.
Here we are.
Most people there didn't want to talk about it, but this one woman did.
Hola, buenas.
We met Miriam Aladib at her gynecology clinic in the centre of the town.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
Me, Alex Atak, who's producing this series, and Matteo Fagotto, a journalist. He was helping us to translate.
So you want Miriam to sit here?
Yeah,
okay.
Miriam, by the way, was more comfortable speaking to us in Spanish, so from now on you'll hear a voice actor.
Bueno, yo como la gran mayoría de los padres, he dado teléfonos a mis hijas.
Well, like most parents, I've given phones to my daughters. I've always tried to set rules and alert them to possible abuse.
Miriam gets technology. She uses Instagram to give women information about their bodies that even in the 2020s, they might not be getting from their school or from their doctors. She calls herself a rebel gynecologist, and she's got 150,000 followers. But none of that prepared her for what happened last September. She'd been traveling, and when she got home, her daughter, who's 14, said she needed to tell her about something that had been happening at school.
And as soon as I got home, she told me, Mom, there's something I want to tell you. and she showed me the images. Well, it's a shock when you see it, because the image is completely realistic. It seemed real.
What she was looking at on the screen was an image of her child, naked. It looked real, but Miriam knew it just couldn't be.
Because I know my daughter's body. If I didn't know my daughter's body, I would have thought this image was real.
The pictures had been made using an app powered by artificial intelligence called CloughOff. It lets you upload pictures of any woman or any girl that you've taken yourself or from someone's social media. Put it into the app, and for a price, the AI gives you back the same pictures without clothes. Miriam's daughter told her that over the summer holidays, a group of boys in the town had started downloading the app and feeding it pictures of her and her classmates, taken from their social media.
Some guy told my daughter, "I've seen you in the WhatsApp group naked," and she asked him to send her the photo. She wanted to see what was going on, and they sent it to her.
Quickly, it became clear that this hadn't just happened to a couple of girls. There were dozens of these fake naked pictures of young girls from four different schools in El Mendralejo, all being shared in a WhatsApp group.
The first weekend she went out on the street, she ran into the boy who did that to her. And that boy was with two other boys. One of these other two kids said, laughing, "I'm going to take photos of you."
Some of the girls were being threatened, told they had to pay money, some kind of ransom, for their picture not to be shared. Miriam talked about this feeling of violation, wondering where these photos had ended up. Were they going to live forever in some dark corner of the internet? The girls were devastated. Some refused to leave their house for weeks.
Hola de nuevo. Se nota que hace tiempo que no hago un directo por Instagram.
This is Miriam at the time, speaking on her Instagram. Using other people's images to do this barbarity and spread it, she says. It's a very serious crime. You can hear how furious she is. Girls, she says, don't be afraid to report this stuff. Tell your mothers. Miriam's post quickly went viral, and journalists from all over Spain started arriving in the town.
Unánime es la que ha recibido esa difusión masiva de fotografías de menores que a través de la inteligencia artificial habían sido manipulados.
The police launched an investigation, though Miriam said, at least initially, it felt like they were trying to just downplay the whole thing.
Resaltar el fracaso absoluto del sistema en el tratamiento de estos hechos. No podemos presumir de ser una sociedad avanzada y moderna y permitir.
This is audio from a police event around that time. The chief of police in the town says the people who publicized this haven't thought about the impact on these kids. But he's not talking about the girls. He means the boys who made the pictures, who he says have been treated like, in his words, terrorists. Despite what they were saying in public, in the background, police were taking this seriously. They were gathering evidence, and after a couple of weeks, they handed a 200-page case file to the state's prosecutor, and his job was to figure out who would face criminal charges. The office of prosecutor Francisco Javier Montero Juanes was lined floor to ceiling with legal textbooks and watched over by a giant oil painting of a Catholic saint, which pretty intimidating. Francisco told us he had decades of experience and cases involving pictures like these weren't new to him. But obviously, this case was different. He said it might be the first crime involving AI in all of Spain. When he got the dossier from the police, he began investigating 26 teenage boys for offences against 21 girls.
Contestando primeramente a la cuestión general que me ha planteado, no.
Though this situation is new, and Spain doesn't have specific laws about misusing AI, Francisco said he could probably find the laws that would fit. But there are all these other questions. Like, in this case, the images weren't made by adults, but by other kids. And maybe those kids needed to be punished, rehabilitated. But even if you could charge them with criminal offences, should you?
It sounds as if the technological abilities of these boys or the technology they have access to is far more advanced than their own ethical and moral development.
Sí, 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 sí.
This was all completely uncharted territory, a messy collision between people and AI. But Francisco said there is someone who, in his view, had broken the law. It was whoever had made the app that gave the boys this terrible power. I've never seen an app that invites you to commit a crime, he said. But going after them, you hit a different hurdle.
No. No tenemos mayores...
Francisco said his office suspected the creators of this app were based somewhere in Eastern Europe, maybe Ukraine, maybe Russia. But that's all they knew so far. And without more, there was no way to go after them. Back in London, we decided to spend some time looking into this app, ClothOff. At first we thought, maybe Almendra Lejo was unlucky. A bunch of kids somehow got their hands on this app and caused havoc. And then...
We want to turn out a disturbing story about an incident involving female students.
We started to see the same story in other places.
Alunos de um colégio do Rio de Janeiro estão sendo investigados como suspeitos de usar a inteligência artificial.
Canada, Brazil, Australia.
Incidents like this are becoming common, with teenage girls often the target.
And a case in America, in New Jersey.
I couldn't believe my ears. I'm not going to lie, I did start crying because I was very emotional.
And according to legal documents, the app that was used at that New Jersey school, that was ClothOff. All of these stories focused on the kids who had generated the images and the girls who were the victims. And they treated the AI like it was some kind of bystander, unstoppable, like a force of nature, as if there wasn't a human being behind it all. Maybe some guy in his bedroom causing this chaos and making money off it. And it made me wonder, who is this person? Could we find them and make them part of the story too?
So obviously we can start digging into the website itself to see if there are clues there.
We started with their website. I asked my colleague Manisha Ganguly to help. She's an investigations correspondent with The Guardian, and this kind of thing is right up her alley.
So is it a quick and dirty job, or have they put thought into it?
ClothOff's website, unsurprisingly, is very grim.
Allows you to remove all unnecessary elements of clothing from the image.
The front page has this animation. It's a woman in what looks like an office. And at first, this woman is wearing a red suit. But then, as this laser moves down her body, the clothes disappear. ClothOff isn't hiding what this app is for. Its tagline is undress any photo with AI. And when you click through, it explains how all of this works.
They're saying it's a neural network, which is a breakthrough in AI. So just buzzwords, buzzwords.
Mm-hmm. You pay money to buy credits that they call VIP coins. And you use those coins to upload pictures to the app or the website. And you get back a naked image. It costs about £8.50 to create 25 pictures. And another thing that's clear right away is that the website has been really carefully built to give nothing away about who's behind it or where they might be based. They talk to their customers through these anonymous channels on social media.
Is this on their Telegram channel, ClothOff channel?
Uh-huh. Yeah, if you push preview.
Alex
yeah.
was there, and so was Josh Kelly, the executive producer of the series.
So now they're basically like doing updates of, oh my God, they've got 773,000 subscribers.
ClothOff has its own Twitter feed, a busy Telegram channel.
4,300 hearts, 1,400 thumbs up.
It even polls its users on new features, like whether they want to be able to change the body shape of the people they're undressing. It all felt pretty bleak. And strangely enough, the website included an email for media.
Is it worth emailing them? I mean, what is the chance they're going to reply to that though?
Send them an email and find out.
So Alex sent an email with his phone number on it. And the next day, he said he had an update.
Okay, so you know the guys from ClothOff?
Yes. Yes, I do know the guys from ClothOff.
Last night, I got a message on WhatsApp.
They got back to you?
Yeah, they got back to me a day later. Firstly, it's from a UK number.
Uh-huh, interesting.
But I have a feeling that might just be like a disguise number.
Okay.
But they sent me their answers as voice notes.
As voice,
so I'll play them for you.
Okay.
Dear Alex, hello. Thank you for your questions. I personally would be glad to take a part of your podcast.
This is a disguised voice.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
One of the questions we had asked was, why create an app like this?
About the general idea of the project, well, that's kind of easy. The main purpose of a project is to give people positive emotions.
Do you think he's reading?
I think he's reading.
Yeah.
And show them that they don't need to be ashamed of nudity, especially if it was made by neural networks, by an AI.
The tone of their responses is like as if they're an app that like superimposes you on a beach in Bali or something. It's like a kind of fun AI filter to share with your friends, like not an app that
is causing mayhem in the lives of teenagers right now.
Yeah, definitely doesn't understand. It seems that they don't understand the kind of gravity of what their app could be used for.
That also answers on who is our target audience, as you asked. It is people who have a positive attitude to new technologies and they can laugh together on the results they get from AI.
The app was supposed to help people not feel ashamed of their bodies, he said. It's for people to get together and laugh about these pictures. This was hard to swallow.
Well, that's it. I'd like to thank you again for reaching out to us and especially...
We kept asking them to get on a call and they kept finding excuses not to. But every now and then, they'd pop back up with new messages.
Hello again. I'm sorry for such a long response.
We asked about the obvious ways this app could cause real harm in the world. What did they think of that?
Same as nobody cares when they get a famous spam messages about lotteries they won or big cash from their far relative they never heard about. It would be funny if people blamed email services for that.
If you couldn't make that out, he said, blaming us for what others do with our app is like blaming Gmail if somebody sends you spam. Cloth off, just make the tool available. What you do with it, that's up to you. They were happy to send us this kind of stuff all day. But when we asked them who they were, where they were from, nothing.
Speaking of your last question about myself, I'm not into sharing it, really, since I never wanted to be a meta person or something. But
and that's pretty much all we got. But at some point, while we were talking, other clues started to surface. For some reason, late last year, a company name appeared on the Cloth Off website. It was almost hidden in tiny text right at the bottom. And it turns out it was registered to an address in London, like a tube stop away from The Guardian. And we thought, maybe someone had added this by mistake, slipped up, and now we knew where to find these guys. So on a freezing day in the middle of winter in London, we decided we should go and see what was there.
Okay, so we're in Hatton Garden in London, which is the diamond district of the city.
It led us to Hatton Garden, which is famous in London for its diamond and gold, and its history as a hotspot for organised crime.
Yeah. Should we go inside?
Through some glass doors, we were met by a security guard watching Instagram reels on his phone. We told him the company we were looking for, and he just waved us through.
I don't mind you, you can go up there and check.
Yeah.
We piled into this dank little elevator.
It's carpeted.
One with this thick caramel-coloured carpet, lining the floors, the walls, and the ceiling. It all felt a little bit off. On the fifth floor, there was this long corridor lined with doors, lots of them leading to the offices of diamond and gold dealers. Except for one, the place we were looking for.
Written in blue pen and nailed to the wall.
Marked by a piece of paper with a handwritten number 23 nailed to the door. So we knocked. And nothing. Nobody there.
Is he expecting? Is it someone expecting?
No, we're just trying to like find a business, basically, that's registered to this building.
It turns out this creepy room in a plain office building in East London was the registered address of not just Cloth Off, but 6,000 other companies. It was a virtual office, the kind of place that, for about £30 a year, offers anyone based anywhere in the world an official address in London. Many of the businesses that use these kinds of addresses are legitimate, but if you're a company doing something shady, it has the upside that if journalists show up at your door trying to meet someone or get a peek inside, There's nothing to see.
It feels like this is a world I didn't know existed, but like this like maze of businesses in London that don't really exist or don't aren't really where they say they are, and you go to look for them and you end up with just blank stairs or like blank doors. It's just like, what is this?
It's very weird.
We left with the feeling that we'd been on a wild goose chase. A goose chase that somebody, somewhere, had wanted us to go on. As the weeks went on, we were starting to realise whoever we were looking for had gone to a lot of effort to hide their tracks. And then we learned just how deeply those tracks were buried. One day, we were talking to a guy in the office called Phil McMahon, who's a software developer who works with the digital investigations team. And he told us, you guys are just looking at the surface of the website. And he offered to poke around under the hood.
Testing, one, two, three. Yeah,
right, okay.
The first thing he found was there was another website with Clothoff's fingerprints all over it. It gets technical, but it appears they were both run by the same people.
Say, let's go onto the web app and then...
It was called AI Imagecraft. And we had the idea, what if we bought something from both of these websites and followed where the money went? We started with Clothoff.
Say, and let's try MasterCard. And the transactions come up as Texture Oasis.
Texture Oasis, as in that's who you've just paid?
Yeah, so it's all one word, Texture Oasis.
Texture Oasis, a completely new name. And then we bought something from that other website, AI Imagecraft.
And that came up as another Texture Oasis.
Really?
Yeah.
Both websites led to an account called Texture Oasis, which we discovered is some kind of architectural materials business with its own website. It had a listed address in London, another virtual office, it turns out, and a list of staff. So we got in touch with one of the people listed as an employee.
Yeah, I'm definitely not an employee.
This is Rick Ellis. On the Texture Oasis website, he's listed as a 3D modeler, which is actually his job, just not at Texture Oasis, a business he'd never heard of.
This definitely resembles more of the scam type deal.
But what he did tell us is that it looked like everything on Texture Oasis was a lie. He knew of some of the other people listed as employees. None of them worked there. All of the text had been copied word for word from another legitimate architectural design website.
Where they're just straight up saying, these people are part of our organization, have nothing to do with it.
The whole thing was a sham, an entirely fake business designed to disguise payments to Clothoff. To make it look to MasterCard or Visa or whoever was processing the payments that it was all being spent on architectural graphics when it was really being used on deep fake nudes of women and girls around the world. And Rick's name had been dragged into it.
Realizing that that's also, oh my goodness, you know, connected with something much worse is, I feel disgusting.
As we wandered through that hall of mirrors, trying to guess what was real and what was an illusion, stories about AI deepfakes kept piling up.
You nor your kids may have seen or heard about those graphic AI-generated fake images of Taylor Swift that have been...
And governments were starting to act.
The Online Safety Act introduced new offences which criminalise the sharing of or threatening to share intimate images, including deepfakes, without consent. Where individuals create these...
In the UK, at the end of January, creating or sharing these kinds of non-consensual images became a crime. In the US, Congress was holding hearings, talking about changing the law to make it possible to punish people for creating or sharing deepfakes. And Clothoff was still sending us messages, including that, as they put it, their value had nearly doubled since the start of our investigation. Their website was getting more than 4 million page views a month. They sounded delighted. This whole time, it felt like they'd been one step ahead of us. They'd been so careful. But maybe not careful enough. We were sitting around again with Manisha, going over the same clues, looking for something we had missed, when we noticed the Clothoff website
had been updated.
Oh, that's weird. Mike?
That old company name that had led us to the virtual office in London. It had been replaced.
And this is new, by the way. There was no BS Europe last time we looked at this.
BS Europe. A company that appeared to be based in Estonia, linked to someone's name.
And then when we search for BS Europe on the Estonian registry, we see that BS Europe OU is actually registered to Sergei Cheremush.
Sergei Cheremush, a Ukrainian entrepreneur living in the US with a pretty detailed footprint on social media. Sergei might have grown up in Eastern Europe, but he had found himself in California, where it looked like he had gone full tech bro. In videos on his Instagram, he dances shirtless, wearing a glow stick necklace at parties in the desert. He DJs, he goes to Burning Man. And alongside that, he runs a lot of different businesses, including in AI. So we sent him an email, got in touch over LinkedIn, contacted his business partners. Nothing. And then, after a few days, actually, when we were in the studio recording a different
episode.
The
executive producer is Josh Kelly. The commissioning editor is Nicole Jackson. Oh, Josh, are you still rolling?
I got a phone call.
Yep.
Hello.
Coming up, Sergei and the screenshots.
Hi, so Sergei, this is Katerina. She's a colleague and she'll be helping to translate, if that's okay.
A few days later, Sergei Cheremush agreed to sit down with us over Zoom for an interview.
Yeah, is it, you're in California right now?
Yeah. I live in Redondo Beach now. It's beach cities in Los Angeles.
He was more comfortable speaking in Russian, his first language, so we had an interpreter with us, Katerina.
It'd be great to start by, I mean, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, your story, your career?
Sergei said he'd always been an entrepreneur.
We created the mobile app, the drink in exchange for the selfie. So the person could take a selfie of himself and then exchange it for the alcohol.
Very innovative.
Then I moved us on to the point of the call, the thing I really wanted to ask about.
It'd be good to understand, I mean, what is your involvement with CloughOff? What's your, you know, what's your link to it?
His answer took a while.
It's complicated. Actually, Michael contacted me, I've never heard about this company, CloughOff. I was not interested in this company because it was outside my tunnels of the reality. And
though CloughOff was outside his tunnels of reality, Sergei said people from the app had reached out to his company, BS Europe, or Bestseller, for help with setting up a payment system and with marketing. And Sergei says they never started the work. One of the payment providers that Sergei uses flagged CloughOff as a reputational risk and denied them access to their system. And Sergei said that was that. He and I spoke for nearly an hour. For us, this was a big moment, but Sergei seemed unusually relaxed about it all. I think he agreed to talk because he thought this was some minor mix-up and maybe this would be a chance to promote his businesses in the media. But when I explained to him what we were investigating, the way CloughOff, this business with his company's name on their website, had been used in Spain and New Jersey, I could see his demeanor change. This was really serious.
Sure, because it's in my interest that our company won't be involved in any suspicious, you know, activities. It won't have a bad reputation. So, of course, it's in my own interest to provide you with information in my own turn.
That none of us saw coming, the guy we had suspected might be the man behind CloughOff told us he wanted to help us find out who was.
Yeah, I'll inquire and make a request and I will share whatever we find out.
We hung up, and honestly, I wasn't sure what to make of Sergey. In the days after, he sent us copies of emails that appeared to confirm that his business hadn't actually done any work for ClothOff, though it's impossible to independently verify that. But one morning, I woke up to see Sergey had sent me a bunch of messages overnight. They included screenshots of conversations between his company and people who work for ClothOff. Of course, the thought crossed our mind that they may have been fabricated, and then we saw where they led us. In the office, I got everyone together to tell them about it, including our editor, Nicole Jackson.
He says he has been in touch with the people who run ClothOff, his company's contacts from ClothOff. It turns out they've been dealing with them only through Telegram.
Oh.
So all they have are their Telegram profiles and nicknames.
Right.
Sergey's screenshots showed two really interesting Telegram accounts. One was someone with the name Al, like A-L, no surname. And according to the screenshots, this guy Al, he was ClothOff's founder. And he had been posting videos to this account. So we started going through them.
More photos from his hotel room.
Looks very nice.
Wow. Yeah.
ClothOff is doing well.
Yeah.
Al looked like he had this jet-set lifestyle, posting pictures and videos from around the world, from fancy hotels in Hong Kong and Macau, cruising in luxury yachts, pitch-side seats at football games.
And it goes on, but this is from October. So.
They are very good seeing.
But Al was clever. None of these videos ever showed his face. And then there was that other account in the screenshots. One with the name Dasha. And this Dasha account was discussing things like ClothOff's application to banks, partnerships between them and other businesses. It had a profile picture, one that showed a young woman throwing up the peace sign.
She also has this photo, Dasha does, outside a Beatles bar in Cuba. Some beach town in Cuba, Varadero, it looks like.
Unlike Al, it looked like this Dasha account had made a mistake. Whoever it was hadn't listed their surname. But the thing about the internet is, everything you post leaves a trace somewhere. And there are ways to look back in time. And so while this Dasha account didn't have a surname now, a few months ago, it did.
Username, Dunyasha B.
Telephone.
Dasha Babicheva with a phone number.
Ooh.
This is our Dasha, I think.
Dasha Babicheva. Apparently a young woman living in Belarus. And that name and phone number led us to an account on Instagram.
This is her. This is her.
Oh, have you got different...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there you go. That looks more like her.
Ah.
This is her.
And she's in Minsk,
Belarus. So we've got her Instagram.
Ah. Yeah. And she's in Minsk.
Whoa.
Gosh, so young.
And there it is.
Oh, there's the Beatles.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The Beatles pub.
Yeah.
An Instagram account with the exact same picture as the one on Telegram. A young woman in a COVID mask throwing up the peace sign outside a pub in Cuba. And there it was. For the first time in months, a face. The name of a person who all our leads suggested worked for ClothOff. As we scrolled through her Instagram, which was still public at this point, we found a lot of photos of this one guy, someone identified as her brother, someone whose nickname might be Al.
Oh, my God.
Oh, stop it.
Alexander.
Where?
There. Alexander.
The name on that Instagram account? Alexander Babichow.
Thing is, there's nothing...
So he's...
Oh, shit.
What?
AI Imagecraft owner Alexander Babichow.
Oh, wow.
And when we searched for this new name, Alexander Babichow, we discovered someone by that name is listed as the owner of a website. The website of a business called AI Imagecraft. Remember them? That ClothOff sister website that Phil McMahon had found. A website whose payments went to the same place as ClothOff. And the name registered as its owner, Alexander Babichow. And get this, we also found a Telegram account in Babichow's name. There were videos on it, including from recent trips to Hong Kong and Macau.
And when we looked back at those videos posted by Al, supposedly Klothoff's founder, it looked like he'd been in Hong Kong and Macau on exactly the same days. They had both posted pictures from the same hotel. So look, maybe they're just two different people who happen to be in the same cities at the same time. Or both these accounts belong to the same person. After a bit more digging, we found a phone number that we believed belonged to Alexander Babichow. After 6 months, this was as close as we'd ever been to the people behind Klothoff.
Hello.
Hello, is that Alex?
Yeah.
Hey, Alex. My name is Michael Safi. I'm a journalist with The Guardian.
Uh-huh.
You're the guy who runs Klothoff, right?
What is Klothoff? What is it?
Klothoff is an AI app that you run with Dasha Babicheva.
You're mad, man. I think you make a mistake.
Alex, you were traveling recently, right? You were in Hong Kong and Macau.
No.
How odd, because your Telegram lists you as having been in those places. You posted pictures on your Telegram from those places. I'm calling you because we've been looking for you for a few months. And now we finally get to talk to you.
I don't have any any relations with the Klothoff. I don't even know what is it.
I asked him about Dasha, who on social media is named as his sister.
Who is Dasha?
Dasha is your sister.
Man, I think that you are a little bit mad. So please, check your contacts and never call me, okay? I don't know where you took this information, but you totally make a mistake.
I don't think we are. We got this information from your LinkedIn.
From my LinkedIn?
Yeah.
I don't have a LinkedIn.
See, I don't think that's the case, Alexander. I know you've tried to remain anonymous, but there's a lot of information about you online.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, do you have anything you want to say to us about the app Klothoff?
Okay, I have a proposal to you. Let's talk in text, okay? With the Telegram.
Why in text? Why can't we talk properly?
Because I'm working right now. I can't speak to you, okay?
Are you working on Klothoff?
No, I don't work in Klothoff.
Where do you work?
Man, you are so annoying. I think we can finish our conversation. I told you that I'm not the owner of Klothoff. I don't know what site is it. In my LinkedIn, it told I'm not working at Klothoff, if you know. So what do you want from me? You're so fucking annoying. Man, just stop it.
I think it would just be easier for... And he's hung up.
About 2 hours after that call, we got another message from Klothoff. By now, they had given up on those weird, distorted voice notes. The message just said, "Please stop contacting our team through other channels." Al, the Telegram account from Sergey's screenshots, took down all the videos he'd posted from around the world. Then he blocked us. The Babichow Telegram account also blocked us. The LinkedIn account in his name was changed. It no longer says he lives in Belarus. Now it says he lives in Australia. When we called the number listed on the Dasha Instagram account, no one answered. But shortly after, the account was turned private. A few days later, Clothoff blocked access to its website in the UK. As of right now, it's no longer accessible.
Hola.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien.
Earlier this week, we got back in touch with Miriam, told her what we'd found, and got on a call.
Por una parte, el alivio de, oye, si ya están localizadas esas personas, a lo mejor se puede conseguir algo más.
Miriam told us, in her words, she was relieved to finally see names attached to this app. She said if she could, she'd talk to these people herself. Maybe they don't know what they're doing, she said. But she wishes they just knew the harm they were causing.
Sí, ahí desde que esto lo puse en conocimiento, ha habido como una ola explosiva.
We kept talking, and Miriam told me that since she told her daughter's story on Instagram last autumn, and in her words, explosive wave of people from all around the world had been in touch with her. So many that she hasn't been able to get to them all yet. People saying, this happened to me too, or to my daughter. People really struggling, who don't know what to do. When we started this whole thing, we were looking probably for a single person. In my head, this sad guy sitting in his basement, sending us these ridiculous voice notes. But it quickly became clear this was much more than that. Clothoff is a sophisticated operation. They've gone to incredible lengths to stay hidden. They're probably a network of people, maybe in different countries, and we've just revealed some of them. And Clothoff is just one app, the first to corner the market. Since we've been making this, a month didn't go by without some competitor popping up. Other apps doing exactly the same thing. Soon there'll be 10 times as many. They'll be even more powerful. Maybe even able to do video. And when Miriam used that word, wave, it really struck me. Doing this story has felt like standing on the beach, watching this great wave build in the distance. And the things that we've seen in Spain and New Jersey and so many other places are just these tiny ripples breaking off it and crashing to shore. But that wave is still out there, growing. Not just deepfake porn, but fake videos of politicians, fake audio of your voice on the phone to your bank, of atrocities that look real but never happened. Deepfake everything all the time. And when that wave sweeps through, I don't know how we're going to sort fact from fiction. Genuinely. I don't know how we're going to do it. Miriam said she felt that fear too, that pessimism. But she said all we can do is be ready. Update our laws and keep going after the people who might be behind these apps, as hard as it may be. We can't just stand with our arms crossed, she said. We need to make their lives as hard as possible. On the next episode of Black Box, what happens when an AI company kills your boyfriend?
Like, I was crushed. It was like the 7 months that we had been talking was, it just didn't mean anything. It's just like, pfft, just gone.
To read the story we published about this investigation, go to theguardian.com. In a written response to our questions for this episode, the person operating the Clothoff press account denied that their app was used in either Spain or New Jersey and said it was impossible to create images of under 18s using their technology. They said they had no relation to the company Texture Oasis, but declined to explain why payments made to their website were directed to accounts in that name. They denied any connection to Alexander Babichow or Dasha Babicheva. Babichow and Babicheva declined to respond to detailed written questions. When we went to MasterCard and told them that payments could be made to ClothOff directly with their cards, they said, quote, MasterCard standards do not permit non-consensual activity. In recent months, we've provided our customers with guidance that the payment for such deepfake content is not permitted on our network. Black Box is produced by Alex Atak. The executive producer is Josh Kelly. The commissioning editor is Nicole Jackson. Original music and sound design by Rudy Zagadlo. The music supervisor is Max Sanderson. Additional reporting and translation support by Matteo Fagotto, Manisha Ganguly, Phil McMahon, Andrew Roth, Oliver Lachlan, Katerina Malofieva, and Yanina Sorokina. Miriam Aladib's interview was voiced in English by Karina Fernandez. Special thanks to Tom Burgess. The next episode of Black Box is out Monday.
This is The Guardian.